First case for this morning's arguments is Markavich against City of Chicago, 093335 and 094079. Mr. Norman for the appellants.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. And it's, as always, just a wonderful honor to be in front of you, and I thank you so much for hearing our arguments on this case today.
We ask for the jobs. It's okay. So.
Well, thank you anyway.
Okay. So.
I've learned, and actually this case represents one of my favorites, I've learned that words that pass insensibly from our lips or without forethought are often a revelation of the greatest truth, and we still talk about it in our office. When Michael Markavich was outside of Wrigley Field, and Officer Teniuke was a couple of feet in front of him, or Sergeant Teniuke, I should say. And Michael Markavich asked, "Don't they have First Amendment rights?" And Sergeant Teniuke responded, "You do, just not today." And what I want to offer to the court is that comment by Sergeant, or by, yeah, Sergeant Teniuke is reflective of the fact that we really should have a jury trial in this case over whether the police orders in this case were content neutral and narrowly tailored to serve a substantial interest. And
is that a jury trial issue?
The law is not, and we're in agreement on the law. Everybody understands that all three venues in this case involve traditional public forums, in which the test is, if you're going to have a time, place, and manner restriction, it will not pass constitutional muster unless, number one, it's content neutral, number two, it's narrowly tailored to serve a substantial government interest, and number three, that it leaves ample alternative channels of communication. And so there are a lot of factual minutiae in these three venues today. And so what we're suggesting, and I'll hit on some of it, I don't want to go into all the minutiae, but we believe that justice demands a jury in this case, and in fact that the district court made a number of errors, which I'll be glad to highlight and probably will touch upon anyway, and also ignored several genuine issues of material fact in each venue. And so that's where we're starting. I would submit to your honors that the 2006 Gay Games, or Gay Olympics, were far more than just an athletic event. It was an opportunity for thousands of people to come around from around the country to proclaim a message of affirmance of the gay lifestyle and to encourage people who are in the gay lifestyle. Our clients were five volunteers who came from Repent America to present a minority message, as if you will, and one that is actually considered to be very provocative among those who have fervent support for the gay lifestyle and gay, you know, just gay support and that sort of thing. And our message is that Jesus Christ died for all of our sins and that homosexuality is a sin. The act of engaging in that is a sin. And that's essentially our message. And I think you will find, and I would encourage your honors to look at the videotapes from Soldier Field and Wrigley Field. The one from Gateway Park was confiscated by the police and never returned to us, so we don't have that one. But from those other two venues, and you will see in all three venues here, the city's claims is substantial interest, and we don't dispute that this is a substantial interest in ensuring the free flow of pedestrians. But in each one of these cases, you will find that there is no objective evidence that any one of our five volunteers ever blocked anybody, or that they even represented a possibility of blocking anybody, because in each one of these venues, the police and the city in general had already made the opportunity to accommodate hundreds of people coming into Soldier Field, crossing Sheffield from the Red Line and going into Gate D at Wrigley Field, and through Gateway Park onto Navy Pier. In each case, again, traditional public forum in which it was anticipated that hundreds of people would come through. And so that I would submit to you that five people cannot block traffic unless they try to do it intentionally. And there's no evidence that anybody did that. I think the fact that we have what is deemed to be a controversial message in the realm of a lot of people who are fervently in support of the opposite position made our message controversial. And there's a visceral reaction we all have to that. If I say homosexuality is a sin, marriage is between one man and one woman, and these are the messages that were put out there in these traditional public forums, that invokes a strong reaction. I would encourage you, for example, to look at the video of Michael Markavich walking around Wrigley Field. Now, he had the video camera in one hand, and he had a sign in the other hand saying what I just said, that homosexuality is a sin, and that marriage is between one man and one woman. You'll see the reactions of just the people who are out there, the negative reactions that he drew. Now, I believe, and you know, my clients, they know more about constitutional law than most attorneys, but the evidence will show here that my clients were very respectful of the authorities here. The city has tried to paint my clients as disruptive and professional problem makers and that kind of thing. They just have a fervent desire to go out and preach the message of Jesus Christ. And in the venues that they were in, they actually, for example, if you look at the beginning of the video at Soldier Field, you'll see Michael Markavich talking about, as he's trying to help another group of people with a Christian message out there, that he went to the city of Chicago before the opening event at Soldier Field. Before that time, he met with a corporation counsel for the city and other public officials and explained what they wanted to do. There were five people, a small group, and that they wanted to proclaim this message. They wanted to set up the ground rules. And so they actually went to the city and talked with them. Also, you'll find out if you look at the evidence in Gateway Park, when Officer Andrews was demanding that they vacate the entire traditional public forum, because they couldn't be there, Michael Markavich picked up his cell phone and dialed 911 to call the supervisor over Officer Andrews. In other words, just he's going up to the person who's above Officer Andrews to explain that they have a right to be here. It's a public venue. And so I just want to put out there that my clients are actually respectful of authority.
Mr. Norman, is there any evidence that you offered to the district court showing that the police officers involved were subjectively hostile to the message that your clients were expressing?
Yes, there's plenty of evidence that we offer. Now, I'm not sure if it's subjectively hostile
to the message as opposed to exactly where they were and when they were there and so on.
Yes, and by hostile to the message, I mean distinguishing that message, the content of that message that our volunteers had from the other messages around. And let me, for example, take Wrigley Field and try and give you a direct answer to this.
That would be helpful.
One volunteer at Wrigley Field, so you'll see from the video, only Michael Markavich is out there. We have within about a 60-foot radius, Michael Markavich is standing along some newspaper boxes. Simply, right to the east of that.
Is your point there, your point from the briefs about, in essence, selective enforcement?
Well, it's not content neutral.
Well, the reason I'm asking, in that situation, I'm reminded of the police officer who sees 10 cars go by that are speeding.
Yes.
He picks one out to give a ticket to. That person may feel that it's unfair, that he should have given a ticket to the 9 others, but he can't. How is this different?
This is different because we have, in that case, the person who sped was guilty. And so there's nothing unjust about one officer being able to pick one of those cars and ticketing that person. In this case, we have a minority message. And let me just give you the example of Wrigley Field, for example. Again, there is no evidence, no objective evidence, that Michael Markavich was ever in the government's substantial interest is the free flow of pedestrian traffic. And I am answering your question.
Let me, if I could interrupt you about this. I guess if the selection that occurred at Wrigley Field is your response, I understand that. Was there anything else indicating that the police were hostile to the content of the message at any of the three locations?
Well, yes. For example, at Soldier Field, all the messages that were perceived anti-gay, that is to say the Christians, were segregated off of the wide sidewalk, which deprived my client of handing out tracts, which is an unobtrusive activity, and speaking one-on-one about the gospel of Jesus to the individuals. All the other public expression on this 10-foot wide sidewalk was allowed to go on. All the people that...
People going to the Soldier Field event.
Going to. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that all of them were attending at Soldier Field. Some other people might just have been walking along as well. So keep in mind that it's not just people with tickets to the opening event. Anybody with a message that was allowed on that sidewalk, anybody with a message that was considered not hostile was allowed on the sidewalk. Whether they were walking or not, there were a number of people who were stopped. And so, but we were segregated off to the side because of the message we had. And there were only seven people on the side. Now, we had five of them. There were a couple of others. And so I would submit to you, Your Honor, that they could have just let our people hand out tracts on the sidewalk. They wouldn't have blocked anyone because there's just too much space there unless they lined up together and they could have said, well, you have to spread out. That would have been a narrowly tailored order. They would have required the same amount of police supervision in order to allow them on the sidewalk and let them spread out as opposed to watching them and keep making sure that they stay 15 to 50 feet away in the red gravel area. Now, my point at Wrigley Field, Your Honor, is that Officer or Sergeant Tenayuke focused only upon Michael Markavich. At the beginning of the video, when he gets to that corner, Officer Tenayuke comes up to him and says, you've got to keep moving, buddy, even though he's off on the side and he's not blocking any traffic. And so, again, now keep in mind that within the same 60-foot area, there are people, there's someone with a sign protesting President Bush, and he's speaking orally out there. He's not bothered. There are vendors selling T-shirts who are not bothered. There's a person handing out flyers, another person selling newspapers. None of them were bothered. And this is the same area. The same officers within about 60 feet of each other are not bothering those people. And worse still, those people are in the crosswalk. Most of them are in the crosswalk of Sheffield. There are two wooden police horses there. Which make that a very relatively narrow when all the people come off the red line heading towards Gate D of Wrigley Field. They have to go through that narrow area. Sergeant Tenayuke allowed all of them to stay there without telling them to move or talking to them. And then he required there was a woman in a blue shirt who apparently worked for Wrigley Field or perhaps the gay games, came to Michael and said, this is private property, although, of course, it's a public sidewalk. It's not private property. But so this is private property. You have to go across the street. After that, Sergeant Tenayuke kept telling my client that he had to go across the street. Now, just to keep in mind, across the street, there's four lanes of traffic on Addison there. It would have eliminated all of his expression. He would not have been able to speak with any people. He wouldn't, even his signs would have been too small to be seen from across the street. He is the only person that Officer Tenayuke, even from the evidence we have in the record, that Officer Tenayuke was even concerned with. But we have all this other First Amendment free expression going on in the same within 60 feet or so. And we're dealing with the same officers being supervising that whole 60-foot area, the same pedestrians coming from the red line crossing Sheffield, and then immediately passing where Michael Markavich was. He looked only at my client, who had the sign about one, you know, marriage being one man, one woman. So I would submit to you, Your Honor, and I hope you can see it. And again, I encourage your questions if I'm not being articulate about this. That was not content neutral. The order that he go across the street was not narrowly tailored. You know, in fact, he was not blocking anybody, so the government's substantial interest was really not at issue. But he was ordered to go across the street to eliminate all of his free exercise or all his free speech. You'll see that from the briefs, the district court made several serious errors. For example, finding that we were required in the first briefs the city's motion for summary judgment to challenge the legality of the MPEA's policy, advanced permitting policy, which is a prior restraint under the law, especially as applied to a small group. But we had really no incentive to litigate that issue because we had stronger facts. In fact, we believe, as to the city's motion for summary judgment, that that policy was immaterial. And the reason I say that, Your Honor, if you have a question, please answer it. The reason I say that it was immaterial is because we had facts showing that prior to going into Gateway Park, that the security officers, and this is in their depositions, number one, told Officer Andrews that that our clients had permission to engage in their expressive activities in Gateway Park without a permit. Number two, the MPEA's position in this case all along has been that they don't enforce their permitting requirement in Gateway Park, and that's a traditional public forum. Navy Pier itself, Navy Pier proper, is not a traditional public forum, and they enforce it there. Number three, Officer Andrews said in his deposition that he got all his information about what was right and what was wrong, that is to say, for criminal trespass, what the landowner required there, that he got all his direction from the security guards. The security guards all testified that they never told Officer Andrews that the plaintiffs couldn't be in there. And, in fact, the evidence shows that our clients were being led, when Officer Andrews came on the scene, our clients were being led off Navy Pier and into Gateway Park, and Officer Andrews observed that. And so he understood, and these are the key questions, Officer Andrews understood that our clients were free to engage in their free expression in Gateway Park, a traditional public forum. And so if those facts are true, and for purposes of the city's motion for summary judgment, they had to be taken as true, then whether the MPEA's policy requirement was constitutional or not made no difference.
When we get to the issue preclusion issue here, it seems to me, frankly, pretty evident that Judge Shader did decide that the MPEA's policy was constitutional.
Yes.
He had the option in addressing qualified immunity, for example, of not deciding that issue, but he did decide it. And if I'm hoping that the lawyers for the MPEA will address this as well. He decided that in the decision that is on appeal in 09-3335, and then the argument seems to be from the defense in number 4079, well, you can't argue that in 4079. You have to argue it in 3335.
Right. That's what Judge Shader found, yes.
Well, Judge Shader is certainly entitled to say, I already decided this. But since both decisions are up on appeal,
yes,
it's not clear to me that issue preclusion applies at this point. And I'm frankly wondering whether the dispute isn't just in which brief the issue was argued. But would you agree that you did brief the legality of the policy as part of your response to the city's motion for summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, we don't agree with that, and here's why we don't agree with that. We mentioned it in our reply brief in the second-to-last paragraph. These were oversized briefs on the city. There were cross motions for summary judgment. So we submitted, between us, six briefs, the city and officers on one side, plaintiffs on the other. We submitted six briefs, well more than 100 pages of briefing. We never, first of all, and let me make this point as a side point, the constitutionality of MPEA's prior restraint is constitutionally suspect. The city has to come forward and
I'm asking you about the merits. I'm asking you about the briefing.
Yes, we mentioned it in the second to last paragraph, and you'll see this, of our reply brief on the city's motion for summary judgment in passing. We put out the Watchtower case and just said it's not constitutional. The city had made no effort to prove it to be constitutional, and that law as a prior restraint carried a presumption that it was not constitutional. So the city would have had to go forward and prove that it was unconstitutional. And this is all laid out in our brief. I won't go into the details. But they made no effort to prove it. All they were doing was defending Officer Andrews. And so we never took it as an issue. We just mentioned in passing, sort of as a throwaway, oh, by the way, if you want to look at the policy is not relevant. The policy is not material here. That was our position. We always focused on the fact that Officer Andrews threw us completely out of Gateway Park, that we were not allowed. There was no effort to narrowly tailor something to protect, narrowly tailor his order. He just ordered us out. Now, again, let me tie this up by saying the crime at issue there for the arrested person was a trespass to land, criminal trespass, and so that requires the landowner to weigh in on whether we're permitted to be there. The underlying factual issue shows that MPEA security guards, who were the face of the landowner as regarding Officer Andrews, said they can do their expressive activities in Gateway Park. And so that was the issue that eliminated probable cause for the arrest, that eliminated qualified immunity, and also made the order unlawful under the First Amendment. And so that was our defense, and that is the reason, and I hope it makes sense, and if not, please force me to be more clear, that was the reason we never even considered litigating the policy as to the city. Now, also, I would say that not only that the city made no effort to prove that it was constitutional, but the MPEA never joined in that motion, and so for issue preclusion purposes, even if we had won, it would not have precluded MPEA from coming in later and challenging it in any event. And so we had no, as they say under issue preclusion, no incentive to vigorously litigate that issue. So that's where we were left. I do want to highlight some mistakes. Now, there are a lot of issues in this. I don't want to go in too much depth to the minutiae unless you want to take me there, and then, of course, I will. The district court made a number of crucial mistakes in this case, and I just want to put them out there, which shows that and what we're asking for here, of course, is that, again, we're asking for a jury trial against the city and police officers, that the case be reversed and remanded as to the claims under the First and Fourth Amendments, the latter through the 14th Amendment, be remanded for a jury trial in the district court. And we're also asking this court to find the MPA's policy unconstitutional. And in regards to the MPA's policy, I would point out that we raised this both on the MPEA's motion for judgment on the pleadings that it was unconstitutional, and in our opening brief in the latter of the two appeals, Your Honor, that you mentioned a few minutes ago. They have never defended it here, but this court is free, because all these issues are up before you in this combined appeal, that we are asking you to reverse the decision that the MPEA policy is unconstitutional. That's all laid out in our briefs. I won't go into the details unless you want me to. But I do want to highlight some of the mistakes that the district court made. But, Your Honor, if you have a question, please go ahead. Well, it looks like I'm getting into my rebuttal time. So, Your Honors, unless you have more questions, that's more important than anything. I'm going to save my rebuttal time.
Go ahead. Okay. Thank you. For the city defendants, Ms. Erickson.
May it please the court. Plaintiff's challenges concerning regulations where First Amendment activity would be allowed to take place at three crowded venues at the Chicago Gay Games should be rejected. This morning I'd like to address plaintiff's challenges at each of the three venues, beginning with Soldier Field, then Navy Pier, and then Wrigley Field. Deputy Chief Dugan's orders at Soldier Field, preventing plaintiffs from demonstrating directly on the wide sidewalk where buses were unloading, but allowing them instead to demonstrate on the gravel area adjacent to the wide sidewalk and on other sidewalks closer to the stadium, were permissible time, place, and manner regulations. The first, I'd like to respond to Judge Hamilton's question to plaintiffs on this, whether or not there was any evidence of the police officer's subjective intentions at
hostility toward the message.
Sure, hostility towards the message, and the answer to that is no. There's no statements from the police officers at any of these events or at any of these things indicating what their opinion is on plaintiff's message. And, in fact, in each of the depositions of the officers, plaintiffs took the opportunity to inquire about each of the officers' religious beliefs and religious backgrounds. And in each of those cases, I believe the officers responded that they were Roman Catholic or born-again Christian. So there's no indication that these officers were subjectively hostile.
May or may not tell you anything about attitudes towards the message, but...
Certainly, but if they were... at least the plaintiffs had the opportunity to make these inquiries and did not...
You're saying the record is silent on that point.
The record is silent on that point, certainly. There's no evidence in the record to support the inference that they were subjectively hostile to the message. In addition, beginning at Soldier Field, Deputy Chief Dugan's orders were plainly content neutral. Here, the government's justification for the order's controls, and Deputy Chief Dugan was clear to say that the purpose of moving the plaintiffs off the wide sidewalk where buses were unloading was to ensure the free flow of pedestrian traffic.
Were other protesters permitted to be in the place where the plaintiffs in this case wanted to be?
No. All the other protesters at the event were either moved to the gravel area directly adjacent to the wide sidewalk, or there was a second area where people were conducting demonstrations. The people on the wide sidewalk were coming off of the bus and heading towards the stadium, which would indicate that they were all participants in the event. I know plaintiffs in their reply brief have tried to make the argument that there were some distinction between attendees and supporters. My response to that is twofold. The first is that they've never pointed to any evidence of a distinction between these people getting off the buses moving towards the stadium. They've never identified any individuals that they didn't believe were going to attend the games. And in fact, I think the act of getting off the bus and actively walking towards the stadium would be evidence to the contrary.
So all the people who had a message they wanted to deliver were operating under the same rules that the government and the city wanted the plaintiffs to operate.
That is correct.
And that's what the record shows?
That's what the record shows. And the Supreme Court case Hill v. Colorado makes clear that it is permissible to distinguish between people based on their conduct rather than the content of their message. And here the distinction on the conduct is people attending and participating in the gay games on one hand and people protesting or demonstrating who are just there for the purpose of protesting and demonstrating on the other hand. And this is a permissible distinction to draw and does not impact the content neutrality of Deputy Chief Dugan's very modest order moving them off of the sidewalk. I know plaintiffs have also tried to make an issue of fact as to whether or not they were literally blocking the sidewalk. I think the evidence in the record is clear. Plaintiffs themselves have asserted that the wide sidewalk where buses were unloading was the main thoroughfare going into Soldier Field, where hundreds of people were walking. They have indicated that the wide sidewalk was only wide enough to accommodate 4 to 5 people walking abreast. They've indicated that they wanted to be on that sidewalk not just to hand out leaflets, but to have one-on-one conversations with the people on the sidewalk that would take at a minimum 1 to 2 minutes. That's plaintiffs' own words on this. Under these facts, it's on all fours with the Supreme Court case in Heffron, where the Supreme Court had no trouble determining that was a threat to the free flow of pedestrian traffic.
Was there any problem with if they were just walking with them? There seems to be some dispute about that. If they were to go position themselves where they're getting off the bus and then sort of walk along with the same speed and talk or do whatever, engage, would that have been okay, or did they try that and not work, or what?
The record is conflicted on exactly when the plaintiffs were ordered off the wide sidewalk. Our position is that we need not have the most the least restrictive policy in place, and that's well established by the Supreme Court, that when we need to have a restriction that's narrowly tailored to advance our substantial government interest, it need not be the least restrictive. And so here, asking them to stand beside the sidewalk rather than be directly on it, we think is well within the bounds of a permissible time, place, and manner regulation. I think there are certainly scenarios where you could imagine if the plaintiffs walked at the exact same speed and didn't detain anybody, they were able to continue moving with the free flow of traffic, perhaps that would be the case. But I don't think we need to meet that in order to show our regulation as permissible.
Well, I just wonder if that was a fact that somebody determined that no one, at least what I saw, no one seems to have been inhibited if they were walking with the people on the sidewalk, not blocking or not confronting. And maybe that didn't happen.
The best evidence of what was going on at Soldier Field comes from plaintiffs' own videotaped evidence of what was going on there. And in particular, there's a point in the videotape where Mr. Markovich is having a conversation with the police officers on the wide sidewalk, and he points the video camera down so you can see the feet of the people who are walking by, and you can certainly see that people are going out of their way to walk around Mr. Markovich on the sidewalk there. So I think it's not hard to see how, you know, pedestrian traffic, there would be some impediment to pedestrian traffic having people on that sidewalk.
Well, that is, I mean, obviously when he's talking to the officer, he's standing there and doing whatever confrontation or something. You said something about standing on beside the sidewalk on the grass, I guess?
Yes.
That's okay?
Yes, that was, the officers said that was permissible at one point.
Just so you're not on the pavement?
Just so you're not on the pavement, on the wide sidewalk where the buses are unloading. Now, on the more narrow sidewalks closer to the stadium, they were allowed to be on the sidewalks as long as they kept walking.
As long as they kept walking.
Right, on the narrow sidewalks closer to the stadium.
So they could walk with the people and talk, I guess.
That's correct, at that location. So in addition to being content neutral and being a narrowly tailored regulation, Deputy Chief Dugan's orders at Safe Soldier Field were also left open ample alternative channels for communication. And that's, as we just discussed, they're standing directly beside the wide sidewalk. Plaintiffs have testified or put forth the assertion in their statement of facts that their intended audience was all on this wide sidewalk. So by standing beside the wide sidewalk, they were still reaching the same audience. And again, they were also permitted to be on the narrower sidewalks closer to the stadium. So,
could somebody who was receptive to the message have, in essence, stepped off the sidewalk to talk with the plaintiffs?
Yes, certainly. And the video actually shows, not necessarily receptive, but the video does show that people...
At least engaging?
engaging in discourse with plaintiffs, stepping off the wide sidewalk to engage in discourse with the plaintiffs. So that was certainly not only possible, but did happen under the facts. Moving on to Navy Pier, plaintiffs have put forth, I guess I'll start with Navy Pier's written policy expressly required plaintiffs to obtain a permit before they could protest at Gateway Park, and plaintiffs freely admit that they did not do so. Under these facts, plaintiffs' First and Fourth Amendment claims fail. First, on plaintiffs' First Amendment claim, they simply haven't put forth any theory for why an arrest without probable cause amounts to a standalone First Amendment claim. So on that, we would ask the court not to recognize that claim, but simply to evaluate it under a Fourth Amendment claim for false arrest. As far as probable cause goes, the record is clear that Officer Andrews did, in fact, have probable cause. And I'd like to take this opportunity to highlight two problems in plaintiff's reply brief. In particular, two material misstatements of the record. First, on page 7, plaintiffs say Officer Andrews testified that his complete knowledge of MPEA's policy came from MPEA security guards that day. Officer Andrews never testified to that. That's not in the record. The second is on the following page. They say he had no idea about what MPEA's policy stated and was not familiar with it. Again, that does not appear in Officer Andrews' testimony. What the record does show is that Officer Andrews had only been on the job for a few days, or had only been assigned to Navy Pier for a few days at the time of this incident, and that he did have a conversation with MPEA security guards prior to arresting Mr. Markovich and Mr. DeFerio. But the record does not say that his only knowledge of the policy was from the conversation. In fact, the record indicates that it was Navy Pier's policy to educate new officers as to the terms of the policy, and this comes from the deposition testimony of Vince Gavin, who is the Assistant Director of Governmental Communications at Navy Pier. He says that it was their policy for him personally or the Chief of Security to educate the new officers as to what the policy was, that they kept written copies, hard copies of Navy Pier's written policy in the control room, which is where officers would check in at the beginning of their shifts. So there certainly is credible evidence in the record that Officer Andrews was aware of the policy. And the best evidence of Officer Andrews' awareness of the policy comes from James DeFerio's own sworn testimony. And I'm quoting here. He says, "We were being told by Chicago police that the park belongs to Navy Pier and it's private property, and therefore we could not be on it without a permit, so we had to leave immediately or be arrested." So while plaintiffs try to make an issue of fact as to how Officer Andrews knew about the policy, it's very apparent from the record that he was, in fact, acting under the terms of the policy when he told plaintiffs to leave Gateway Park.
Let me ask you about the policy. What number of people are required to get a permit here for Gateway Park?
Under the terms of the written policy, any number. There's no threshold.
Two?
I believe so. MP Council might.
Well, let me. I'll ask you some questions, and if he wants to answer them, that's fine. But what concerns me is that some other circuits have addressed this question of how many people you can require to get a permit in what we would think of as a traditional public forum. I think we said 50 was okay in the Thomas case, and the Supreme Court agreed. But when we get down to much, much smaller groups, 10 or fewer, we've got circuit courts saying, no, there's just no substantial need to regulate such small groups of people through a permit requirement. So I'm troubled as to how we could uphold this policy applied to a group as small as 5 or 3.
From the city's perspective, Officer Andrews was entitled to enforce this policy unless it was flagrantly unconstitutional.
I understand the qualified immunity defense, but we also have the and lots of arguments as to why we shouldn't reach the issue.
Yeah.
But if we do reach the
if
issue,
you do reach the issue, my understanding
help on this from the city's perspective.
Sure, my understanding that the Navy Pier sets forth two policies: their official written policy, that, as I understand it, has no minimum number; everybody has to get a permit, and then they have an unofficial, or maybe it's official, but a non-written policy, exceptions to that policy that change based on the size of the group. My understanding is that Navy Pier is a very crowded venue. I think in the summer they get something like 85,000 visitors a day. So the need to regulate the traffic going through this sort of bottleneck at the mouth of the pier is very high. And so that's, I think what they will tell you is the reason that they believe their policy is constitutional, that there's a significant need to regulate demonstrators and protesters in this very congested area and to have advance notice. I think they'll also tell you about the number of permit applications they receive on any given day that would show this is.
If you want a lateral to your co-counsel, that's just
more
fine.
More than happy to. I think they've probably given a little bit more thought to that than I have. Moving on to the events at Wrigley Field. At Wrigley Field, Sergeant Taniyuke provided two orders to Mr. Markovaj. First, to keep moving, and when Mr. Markovaj made clear that he intended to stand still and not move, that's when Sergeant Taniyuke issued the subsequent orders to cross the street. He issued those orders no fewer than 7 times that were caught on tape, but of course we know from plaintiff's own recitation of the facts that he continued to issue that order even after the tape stopped running.
Is across the street 4-lane highway?
It's across Addison Street outside of Wrigley Field.
I don't know my way around here.
So. I thought you were a Cubs fan.
You know, I live in the neighborhood. I would not call it a 4-lane highway.
Well, there's a place you can go across the street and it would be relevant in a protest.
Yes, and in fact, when you view plaintiff's videotape of their protest activity there, after the point at which Mr. Markovaj is arrested, they continue to videotape their own protest activities, and while you see numerous members of their group on the sidewalk facing closest to Wrigley Field, they also pan over to what appears to be a member of their group on the opposite side of the street doing the same thing. So I think their own evidence shows that the opposite side of the street, there were also people, it was also an opportune place to put out their message, that there were people attending this event on the opposite side of the street. They were holding large signs. The record shows Mr. Markovaj in particular was holding a large sign above his head that said homosexuality is a sinful perversion and marriage is between one man and one woman. Certainly being on the opposite side of the street would not have hampered at least his ability to hold his sign and talk to people on the opposite side of the street. In addition, it's clear that Sergeant Taniyuke's orders were content neutral, and we know that first because the only time he targeted anyone from Repent America was when Mr. Markovaj held his sign and stopped in front of the busy crosswalk. He didn't target Mr. Markovaj the first time he walked in front of Sergeant Taniyuke holding his sign, and that's because Mr. Markovaj was continuing to move. And he didn't target another member of their group, Mr. Murphy, who, again, was in the same vicinity as Mr. Markovaj, preaching aloud with a sign affixed to his shirt, but he was also pacing at the same time. So we know, based on that the Sergeant Taniyuke's orders was not aimed at the content, but rather at the conduct, standing in a crosswalk where people were trying to come into Wrigley Field. We also know that it's content neutral because he issued the same order both to Mr. Markovaj and to the Bush protester who was standing right next to him. I know plaintiffs are trying to contest who that order was issued to, but I can't emphasize enough the best evidence of what was going on there that day is plaintiff's own videotape, and when you review the videotape, there's no doubt that Sergeant Taniyuke's order was issued to both people, and you know that because immediately after he issues it, the Bush protester leaves and walks out into Sheffield. So there's just no doubt when you watch the videotape what was going on there. In addition, Sergeant Taniyuke's orders, in addition to being content neutral, they were narrowly tailored and left open ample alternative channels for communication. Had Mr. Markovaj initially complied with it and kept moving, even plaintiffs concede that would be the most narrowly tailored order that could have been issued. Of course, Mr. Markovaj refused to do that and stated his intention to stand still, at which point we're asking him to cross the street. Is still narrowly tailored. It need not be the least restrictive. And the First Amendment is clear that plaintiffs don't get to choose the very best venue, that there can be restrictions placed on where they do their expressive activity. In addition, Sergeant Taniyuke had probable cause to arrest Mr. Markovaj for disorderly conduct. We know that because of three different aspects of Mr. Markovaj's behavior, first impeding pedestrian traffic, arguing with a police officer, and then refusing to obey numerous lawful orders. As we detail in our brief, each of those is an independent ground for engaging in disorderly conduct. And as such, Sergeant Taniyuke was entitled to rely on them in arresting Mr. Markovaj. If the court has no further questions, for these reasons and the reasons articulated in our brief, we urge the court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Let's see. Mr. Gruhl?
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to attempt to address the questions that have come up this morning. First of all, in respect to the impact, the effect of consolidation on what issues before the court, there aren't any decisions that I'm aware of that discuss the actual effect of consolidation. However, the restatement and other courts cited in the restatement make clear that when we have a final order, even though it's on appeal, it's still preclusive. If the court were to overturn that ruling, then you could, for instance, you could have the second proceeding, you could actually have issue preclusion, and they would then go back for a motion removing that issue preclusive order because of the new ruling. It would probably make the most sense here, I would think, to make the ruling in the city's case and then decide the issue preclusion issue at that point. But a final order is still final for preclusion.
I don't doubt that Judge Shader was entitled to do what he did on the issue preclusion question, but since it's all up in front of us, you can't insulate the question from appeal just by breaking it up into two appeals. So.
And our position would be, first of all, that that plaintiffs should have argued it against the party that they lost the issue on, against the city, which they haven't. But secondly, if this court feels that it...
You're arguing they put it in the wrong brief, right?
In that sense. Second, to the extent that the court decides that it needs to address the constitutionality of the policy, your particular question about the other courts have sort of looked at smaller numbers. In each of those decisions, none of those decisions is putting a per se limit of what the smallest number is. For instance, the Boardley decision, which they recently cited in their 28J letter, it's a regulation that's affecting all 391 national parks. Pretty much all of the cases that they cite are dealing with numerous sites, for instance, all of the streets and sidewalks and public areas in a city. In this situation, we're dealing with a very unique space that has very unique crowd issues. As this court noted in the Chicago Acorn case, Navy Pier is surrounded by water on three sides, and they refer to the only way you get in there is through this, quote, narrow bottleneck, end quote, that is Gateway Park. We have, as our policy notes, we have 85,000 people on a busy day trying to come through there. All of the pedestrians and the vehicular traffic are basically meeting at one point where this roundabout goes across and everybody tends to enter through the south entrance. There is a north entrance as well, but as this court knew in Chicago Acorn, that's really not that well traveled. My point is that in this particular case, because of the unique issues, the rule, our policy is actually narrowly tailored, even though it applies to groups as small as one or two. Because if we've already given a permit for even 15, 20 people in the Gateway Park area, one or two more protesters can cause significant issues for us. There was a First Circuit decision that's not been cited in the briefs, but the Kinton decision, which actually deals with a situation where there was a permitting policy for as much as one, because there was basically everyone was passing through a very small congested area. That's 284 F 3rd 9 in the First Circuit. The only decision that plaintiffs cite that's remotely close to this would be their Berger decision, where they're dealing with the Seattle Center. But even there, that's an 80-acre facility that is surrounded by land on four sides, has numerous pedestrian walkways, and numerous streets going into it. So if congestion appears at one area, the traffic can move around and get to that side in another area. If you want to get to Navy Pier, and you're walking or you're driving a car, you're basically going through this one narrow choke point. And so we have significant safety concerns. There are a number of children walking through there. So one or two protesters can make a difference if we already have a group permitted to protest there.
Can you have concurrent permits? Can be more than one permit per day? Can several groups or people have permits at one time?
For Gateway Park, yes. At Navy Pier itself, our permitting policy was actually before this court in Chicago Acorn. It was then remanded to Judge Mang, and the Navy Pier portion of our policy, which was approved there, there are six different leafleting areas because Navy Pier itself is not public. It was determined that we could have great restrictions there. So we have six leafleting areas where one person can leaflet in each of those areas.
But in Gateway Park, you can allow more than one group at a time.
Certainly.
Demonstrate, protest, whatever.
Certainly. Finally, I guess the last point I would like to make, counsels numerous times said that they had no incentive to vigorously litigate in the summary judgment proceedings before the city. That's simply not true. The city raised our policy as a defense. They attached it as Exhibit O to their summary judgment motion. They said it was content neutral on page 7 of their brief. On page 9 and 10, they talked about the large crowd issues and the fact that the officers needed to deal with people coming in and out of Navy Pier, that there's this free flow of traffic, which they've admitted earlier is a significant government interest. And then on page 12 of the brief, the city notes that there were ample alternative channels of communication available. So the city raised it as a defense. What plaintiffs are basically arguing is what the Secretary of Labor argued in the Continental Can case. In that case, there was an earlier proceeding where the economic feasibility of noise regulations on Continental Can had been raised as a defense by Continental Can. In the second proceeding, they said that that issue has been decided. You're precluded from arguing it. Secretary of Labor said, no, we consider that irrelevant. This court, in that case, disagreed with the Secretary of Labor and said, you cannot avoid the conclusive effect of collateral estoppel merely by deeming irrelevant an issue raised by the other side and choosing not to present evidence on it. They had the incentive to litigate because the city raised it, raised the issue as a defense. For those reasons, and for the reasons cited in our brief, we would ask this court to affirm Judge Shader's ruling. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I would cede the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Gruhl.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, Mr. Norman.
I implore your honors to consider that what, and I'm going to highlight some of the confusion that they have raised here, but the importance of a jury trial in this case. There is so much minutia that we can get lost in, and it's easy to confuse the record here. And I would just assert to you again the importance, and I agree with counsel for the city, to look at the videos because they don't show content neutral, they don't show narrowly tailored, they don't show ample alternative channels of communication. These are factual issues. And so I encourage your honors to consider the importance of allowing a jury to go through these minutiae. Let me just go through a couple of the points that were raised here by the first by the city. The idea that it was okay to take at Wrigley at Soldier Field to take all the protesters and put them in one spot was not content neutral. And let me just read from the Clark case. In other words, what they did at Soldier Field was allow all the protesters and other people who, and we, again, we don't know who was going to Soldier Field and who was just there standing on the sidewalks. There were people standing on the sidewalks. Content, as to content neutral, Clark versus Community for Creative Nonviolent Violence at page 293, government regulation of expressive activity is not content neutral if it cannot be justified without reference to the content of the related speech. Clearly, you have to refer to the nature of this, the content of the speech, if you're going to set up a zone where protesters, as they call them, have to be. All the other free expression was going on this 10-foot-wide sidewalk, and I encourage your honors to consider the fact that a group of five people could not block traffic. Again, these are jury questions. These are not the minutiae that the Seventh Circuit should be involved in. You know, no one seems to have jury trials anymore, but in this case it's so important. As these, all these people chanting and carrying banners and expressive clothing, pompons, are going down the sidewalk, what difference would it have made if we had five people out there handing out tracts? Police officers would have to look to make sure that there's no violence, but that's not our burden to have to stand on this side. And again, why is it important? Because we were unable to hand out tracts, because we were no closer than 15 feet, as far away as 50 feet, and we could not have one-on-one conversations. Now, why is it important? Narrowly tailored to serve a substantial government interest, quoting from the Frisbee case at page 485, an order is narrowly tailored if it targets and eliminates no more than the exact source of the evil it seeks to remedy. In other words, this was too broad to kick them off the sidewalk when they their main thing in talking about Jesus is one-on-one conversations, and to present the gospel takes really a couple of minutes. They have to walk along with somebody, but that they were prohibited from doing that. And handing out tracts, this court, the Seventh Circuit, has said that's one of the most unobtrusive circumstances that you can have. Now, by the way, Heffron and Hill, I would submit to you, are not applicable to this case. In the Hill case, you had protesters around a health clinic or abortion clinic, and there was an 8-foot bubble zone. It's really a different thing. They were trying to protect the women walking in there so they could keep the protesters 8 feet away. That's okay. It's a different scenario than what we have here. In the Heffron case, there was a group trying to sell merchandise and take solicitations or donations. The Supreme Court has recognized that that's more intrusive than just handing out tracts. People can take it or not. The police would have had to watch to make sure there's no violence, but that's not our problem. We should have been out there. And as far as ample alternative channels of communication, I would just, as to Wrigley Field in particular, citing the Weinberg case from this court at page 1040 and 1041, an alternative is not adequate if it forecloses a speaker's ability to reach one audience, even if it allows the speaker to reach other groups, and whether an alternative is ample should be considered from the speaker's point of view. At Wrigley Field, Teniuke's order to go across the street, and it's not a four-lane highway, it's a four-lane street. All the people coming from the red line were on the north side of the street. He would have been on the south side of the street. So he could not speak one-on-one with any of those people. He could not hand out tracts. Even the signs that he had.
Could he walk along the sidewalk? He'd walked along with the traffic?
Are you talking about a Soldier Field or a Wrigley Field?
Wrigley Field.
No. Teniuke arrested him.
He told him to keep moving, right? And then he refused.
He initially, again, this is a jury question. He withdrew that that order after the woman in the blue shirt came. He said, "You got to keep moving, guy." Those were Teniuke's exact words. Now, leaving aside whether our guy really had to, because he was off by the newspaper boxes. Again, look at the video. He was not blocking anyone, but okay, so he should have kept moving. But almost immediately, the woman in the blue shirt comes by and says, you have to go, you know, this is private property, but it's not, and you have to go across the street. And so after that, Taniyuki never said, keep moving. He just said, go across the street. Now, nobody who is on the north side of Addison, I would submit to you, even with a big sign, is necessarily going to look at the south side of the street. So you don't have, and he can't hand out tracts, he can't speak one-on-one about Jesus with these people. So you don't have, these are all factual questions. They should go to the jury. Now let me just move on because I don't have a lot of time here. The district court made errors which prohibited the court from reaching these important jury questions or genuine issues of material fact. At Soldier Field, the district court found, and counsel for the city confused this issue. He found that the police order was that they could stay on the wide sidewalk if they kept moving. Judge Shader found that. Now, that's incorrect. The order, and it's we took a lot of time to lay this out in our brief. I again, don't have a lot of time to go into it. That was as to the narrow sidewalk, which was way to the east, not as to the wide sidewalk here. The police...
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Your time has expired.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The case is taken under advisement.